Blog Talk Radio.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in mid air, sending the clouds. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. Where are the clouds? Sending the clouds. Just when I stopped opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours, making my entrance again with my usual flair, sure of my lines, no one is there. Don't you love a farce? My fault, I fear. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. But where are the clouds? Send in the clouds. Don't bother, they're here. Isn't it queer losing my timing this late in my career? Where are the clouds? There ought to be clouds. Well, maybe next year.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to some discussions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am a member of All Poetry, one of the largest poet sites in the world here on the international web. Inside of that is Team of Voices, and we are a great poetry group that loves to discuss, talk, write about a billion topics. We are here tonight sponsored by the AP Poetry Foundation, and as that might roll right into the next thing I was going to say, the song Bringing the Clouds, sung by Mr. A.P. Taylor himself. Bringing the Clouds was actually originally for a musical called A Little Night Music. It was sung by Judy Collins. Actually, it's been covered by many artists, Frank Sinatra, Barbara Streisand, but it's probably one of my favorite songs. The title refers to a phrase reputedly used in a circus when an unforeseen disaster had occurred, when the clowns being sent in to distract the audience from the problem. but it's also a metaphor for tragic fall from grace. Tragic fall from grace. And won a Grammy Award for the Song of the Year in 1976, based on the popularity of Collins' performance, Send in a Cloud. When Collins actually asked to record the song, the writer had said to her, "You know, that song's been covered by about 200 people." And Collins responded, "I don't care about that. I've recorded songs that are over 100 years old. It's a song that matters to me." And of course, it became a huge hit for her. So I love, once again, the song Send in the Clouds. I love the melody. I love the emotion in it. And AP did such a beautiful job with it. And tonight, as we talk about Robin Williams, one of the greatest actors, comics, clowns of our generation, it was a perfect fit. Beautiful job. All right, so welcome to Sweet Discussions, and tonight's topic is the great comedian, Mr. Robin Williams. So I'm going to say hello to Rack and Tor. Rack, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Good. And then I'm going to say hello to Mr. AP. How are you tonight, sir?
I am very, very well. Right? Very well.
Good. And then I'm going to say hello to Wayne. Wayne, how are you?
Hello, gentlemen and lady.
Good. I'm sorry you were 25 hours early for my show. I felt awful.
I was in a rush last night. I had a rush to get there last night. I got there and went away there.
Oh, I felt so bad. I was like, "Oh, Wayne, I'm sorry." It was bad. Okay, so first off, I'm very excited you guys are here because this is a really great topic to talk about one of the greatest comedians out there. And the tragedy of his death, I mean, he lived just this incredible life, and he died just as dramatically. I know that, you know, a lot of people point to, you know, he died because of suicide and depression and all of that, and yet he died of this horrible disease. And I can't even, you know, I learned more about it and all of these other things that happen, and I can't even imagine even having to deal with this. I know that a lot of people think, you know, dementia is something that they think they can live with, but I'm not sure that I could. And when you take a dementia, you go another level of that. And you go another further level of that. And then you go another. So Robin Williams actually died. He did commit suicide, absolutely 100%. But he'd been suffering from Lewy body dementia. And it is a neurodegenerative disorder, which causes slow responses, physical rigidity, depression, you start to hallucinate, you start to lose the ability to know who you are, your words, your thoughts, and I don't know, if any one of you can explain it better, please jump in. to me it just sounds horrible.
Yes.
So like I said, if anyone, you want to jump in at any time, you're more than welcome. They include fear, anxiety, difficulty sleeping, insomnia, poor sense of smell, stress, tremor in the left hand, paranoia. You just feel like you're losing your mind. He kept telling his wife, Susan, I I'm losing my mind. He kept saying, "I just want to reboot my brain or something. I want to reboot my brain." He just didn't know what to do. he was frustrated. He thought it, you know, he was losing things because they also diagnosed him with Parkinson's disease. He was just, you know, there was something going on and he didn't know what it was. And between a psychiatrist with post-traumatic stress and, you know, it's not like he wasn't reaching out, but nobody knew. Part of this disease is usually discovered after death, postpartum. So
there's no, yeah, the test for it while you're alive.
Yeah, it's just so horrific, and it's just awful. Some of the things a lot of people don't know, John Belushi, the night John Belushi died. I was not aware of that. And he got sober very quickly for a while after that. You would think that might have, you know, having your friend OD the night you're out partying with him obviously helped him for a while, but that did not, like, really shock him into staying sober. He was accused of stealing material from his fellow comics. He had a hard time with a lot of other comics, and because
he had an incredible memory, and what some people thought was that he had a way of, like, scanning a room and listening to 10 conversations at once and being able to recall all of them. So they say that he have heard the joke, you know, not directly or whatever, and not consciously repeated it or incorporated it into what he was talking about. It was just one of those things, the way his mind worked, that people, you know, I want to say incorrectly, but, you know, I have no way of knowing, accused him of stealing their jokes. I had never heard that, but, you know, I would find that hard to believe because he was a very original person, you know. He would take stuff and just twist it, and he had a way. The other thing about his memory, too, was they could hand him a script, and he would memorize the entire thing, one read-through, and that's kind of how he knew something was wrong in the end, I think, was that, you know, he wasn't memorizing things the way he was. His recall was slipping, and he had to, you know, refer back to things that he'd never had to do before.
Well, it got so bad with the other comics backlashing on him that he stopped going out to other shows. He absolutely stopped. He started being more of a recluse, where he wouldn't go to other comedy shows or anything like that, so they would not be able to accuse him of such things.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that stopped his social life. But, I mean, it was pretty heavy duty for him to be ostracized for a while because of that. He was also a big philanthropist with his charity work. And his, you know, comedy works. This man gave just amazing. But I think what we should do is really celebrate who he was. Because he's a funny dude. Oh, my God. Funny man. One of the things I did put up there was the Did You Know? The actor Robin Williams requested that for every movie he worked on or event he did, the producers hire a certain number of homeless people in the area and give them work. I thought that was fascinating because he was a kind man. So let's get some poems up here for those that are here. So AP, we'll get started with you. You're the first one up.
So
I was very impressed by that, too.
Look, I was days early, which doesn't normally happen with me. Sweet, you know, give me 15 minutes before the show and you've got half a chance. But I'm usually not days ahead. Yeah. And I was on this occasion. He was an incredibly bright man, and I think that actually made it harder because the changes would have found even more profound, and he would have found the subtleties of them even more profound. And and to have basically clumps of stuff growing in your brain and then that aren't meant to be there, joined by this sort of spider web of stuff that's not meant to be there either, it doesn't sound very pleasant at all, to be honest. And the impact of these clumps and spider webby things is horrible on cognition, on everything else. And we understand more than what we did 10 years ago, but we still don't understand very much. And he did an amazing job to live through, you know, what he did, to be honest, because it was, he would have found it dreadful. I'm sure he would have. Anyway, this is A Little Spark, and the reason that I had this sweep was because you had a series of quotes, yeah? And
yes.
One of those quotes was, I'm going to make sure I find it now, because you're only given a little spark of madness, you mustn't lose it, was one of the quotes, yeah? And
yeah.
It was written response to that quote, and it goes a little bit like this. Some are born with a streak, others are just that little bit numb. For Robin Williams at his peak had it in spades and then some. We are talking about madness, that ill-defined essential quality, which bears up on sadness and in its place creates hilarity. He would make audiences laugh with his mouth duct-taped close, and he looked to inspire the chaff, not just his legion of fans, by rows. He could insult towards one's head, that in just seconds would seize centre stage his voice harmony-led. So whether Vietnam or Canada, he was always seeking the day with his great verve and stamina that madness in its balanced way. End point.
Oh, that's awesome. I really like how you portray him. I love the mouth duct tape close. he really could. You really never knew which way he was going to go with anything. And he had this ability to take you on a journey. And in that journey, take you on another journey and into another journey. And yet you were still following the original journey. He has always had these stories and stories, and yet we were still focused on the actual journey he took you on, and he never lost you from the original story, even though we side story here and here and here and here and here. I love that kind of storytelling and that kind of humor and that kind of, you know, I never had another comedian that could do it, never saw another comedian that could do it, and even in his serious roles, he was able to do that. You always followed this grand story, and yet inside you found the deeper emotional story that balanced everything, you know, so you could understand the madness and the sadness and the love and everything. He had that ability to pull at every emotion you could possibly have, whether it was through his comedy, through his stories, through whatever media he decided to use. There's a really great book, and I don't know if a lot of people know about it, but Robin Williams co-wrote a Barside book with, I don't know his first name, but Larson.
Yeah.
So there's
Gary,
a Barside.
Gary Larson.
Yeah. Gary Larson and Robin Williams have a Farside book out, and some of those Farside cartoons in that book are just beyond, like, tearful funny. It's a great old book. But yeah, I love an aim, a kick towards one's head that in seconds would see center stage and voice harmony. But that's a great, great stanza there. But I really appreciate this because you kind of just nailed him right down. I'm surprised it's not shaped like him, but I'll let you get away with that one.
It takes a step too.
Everybody, let's say hello to Deb Lee. She is on the line. So hello, Deb.
Deb.
Hello, Deb.
All right. Now I'm right behind her. I'm going to say hello to Hatter.
Unmuted.
Mr. Hatter. All right. So I'm going to start with getting some comments for AP. Rockin' Tour, your thoughts.
Oh, man, I love the way you ended it because you touched on his body of work a little bit. You mentioned, you know, Vietnam and Canada and some of the things that he did in his acting career. It was very clever because, you know, it's true. You not only wove it in, but you added his personality to it and didn't specifically mention that that's what he did, you know, on the screen. But you tied it in wonderfully. The whole thing was a beautiful tribute to him. It really was. He did a great job with it.
Thank you, Rick.
And Wayne, your thoughts?
Yeah. Excuse me. Sometimes comedy can make you cry, I think, if it's the right kind of comedy. He was one of a kind. He would surprise you when he was already surprised. And you'd be sitting there and think, well, you can get a worse, better than this, and he'd just say something off the wall and start all over again, just get you right where he wants you. His poem tells a lot of the demons that he was fighting through, and he did a good job of his poem. Says a whole lot about his life, and you know about what kind of way he's suffering. I liked a whole lot. Good job of this. And, he's my favorite comedian of all time. He's a special person. You did a good job, Terry, too. Good job.
Thank you. Thanks, Juan.
And, Deb, did you get to hear it all?
Well, I didn't get to hear it all, but I was reading it and listening to you guys comment when I first dialed in. For starters, I really loved the opening stanza, especially the part where he had it in spades and then some, because, like, it's very, very true. And then how you went into the different things he could do. And I think that he was one of the most versatile actors out there, because he could make you laugh until your tears were running down your face, but he could make you cry those tears as well. And he could play a serious role with such conviction, and then turn around and be a cartoon character genie that pops out of a bottle. I mean, there's not a lot of actors that have the kind of repertoire that this man has accredited to him, and it's like phenomenal. And he's another one you just can't think, well, what's my favorite movie, because they just pop into your head. Like, I had put one on the board before the show for people to look at the trailer for What Dreams May Come, and in that one he does serious comedy and tragedy and near horror in one movie. You watch that with an open mind and it'll blow your socks off. And then, you know, put back in your mind more from work. He's one of a kind. Great poll.
Yeah. Thanks, Ted.
By the way, those pictures you did were amazing. I loved every one of them. I don't know where you got them, but they were gorgeous.
I like trying to
Thank
dig
you so
stuff
much.
Up to tickle your fancy. I'm glad you liked them.
Yeah, they were just gorgeous. And Hatter, did you hear the poem at all?
Oh, no, I didn't. I didn't. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Did
I
bring a poem?
In a little bit.
Did I bring a poem or did
no,
you ask if I read?
Did you?
Yeah, but
did you hear AP's poem?
Oh, no. That's what you said. No,
okay.
I'm sorry.
That's
one
okay.
of those poems had a respect.
Yeah, we're good. All right.
I was going to say, as a writer, I get really excited when I write something vaguely funny, right? Like vaguely funny, completely over the top funny, just vaguely funny, right? And I reckon I do that about once a month. Yeah, I do something that's vaguely funny, and I read it time for the next year because I'm so excited that I've written it, you know. And this is a person, you know, seriously, that could write comedy but could take material and just turn it into comedy at the drop of a hat. He was so skilled. He was an amazing comic, you know, and it is so hard to do comedy in the way that is ridiculously hard, you know, and he just was so skilled and so skillful and so brilliant at what he did, and he could method act people out of a box. That's pretty what Deb said, but there's so few people that can make people genuinely laugh. And he was one of them.
Oh, I know.
And so for that, for me, he will be remembered as just a legendary human being because he was able to do that. And you can watch these things hundreds of times and still laugh your socks off. You know, I watched Blame Canada that he did on that live performance, and I laugh myself stupid every time I watch it. I must have watched it 100 times, but he's so clever. He's just brilliant. And so tough, you know.
I watch his performance at the Met, and I view it the same way. Every time I watch that performance, I'm crying. And I've seen it. I can't even tell you how many times. But live at the Met, was right. Oh, my God. It's got to be my favorite thing ever.
Yeah. I think he was the only actor invited to Juilliard by John Houseman.
And you can see why, you know. He he was really intelligent, number one. Yeah, like he was blindingly bright. But he was so sharp, and he read a room. He would read an audience, and there's an incredible skill, apart from anything else, there's an incredible skill in reading an audience, and just Robin Williams was legend at it, you know? I had to write, so there you go.
He could add a little bit of it anyway I ever met. He could come off the wall with some of the crazy stuff, just be talking, and he's perfect at that.
Yeah.
That living.
Yeah, you're right. Well, there wasn't one part of comedy.
He did the accents, too.
Yeah,
he did do the
Jonathan Winters.
Brilliant.
Him and Jonathan
Winters were
great together.
Well, that's one of his breakout movies was Good Morning Vietnam, because they allowed him to actually write his script or do so much improv. And prior to that, they had held him back, and none of his other movies were such a breakout hits because they were pretty much binding him to scripts. And Good Morning Vietnam, they kind of just said improv, and they rolled cameras. Just let him go.
I think they didn't write any part of that script for him. They just he had the feel of what he was supposed to say, and they let him go.
Now, sweet. Talking about being let go, I have to go. So I am exiting stage left, but I want you to have a great show, great person, and it was a pleasure to ride on you.
Night,
thank
Abby.
You.
Night,
you.
Abby.
I've ruled the world.
Okay, we'll try.
All right.
Have fun. Talk soon.
Thank you. Stay cool.
Okay. I will. I've got the extra on. So that'll help. Okay, talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Says bye.
All right. Says bye. All right. Next one we're going to go ahead and throw on the board is going to be Mr. Wayne. So.
Yeah, I wrote this poem. Okay. I used 24 of the top movies I've been in the poem. It's tried to hide those in a couple of sayings, but I put all the movie titles together to make a poem. If you like it.
All right. So let me get you up there, Wayne. You've only been waiting 25 hours.
He's a patient man.
He is a patient man. That's very funny. All right, let me get you up here. There we go. Let me get in the studio. Everybody's got that. And I'm going to go ahead and throw this up here. Here we go.
It's 2 weeks after they started last night. We'll go do this. It's funny.
All right, Wayne, here we go.
So this is called, did you ever see that movie? It goes something like this. All these meetings is giving me anxiety. I think I might just join the Dead Poets Society. This big goon said, what you gonna do? I said, I think I'll just nanu, nanu. Man, they were ugly. Did you see them? Said, hell yes, that night at the museum. Walked up to my pal and said, hey, Lonnie, man, don't talk to me. I'm trying to be Jumanji. Look, it's Goodwill Hunting. We better run fast. Up jumped Mrs. Doubtfire, said he can kiss my ass. The Great Awakening had a great awakening. I think it was insomnia. Over to Cape Paradise, it was having a strange anomaly. He said, seize the day. I wanted to deconstruct Harry. Tried to put Dave in a birdcage, but he was contrary. He wanted to be man of the year, and I didn't care. Well, it was Father's Day, and to clean the RV, I said, get the hell out there. Took a one-hour photo to see what dreams may come. Papa gave Aladdin an old right hook, said, come get you some. Death to smoothie after I bought all those toys. And after 9 months, I bought all dogs for the boys. It's...
Oh, my God. This is so good. Oh, my God. You have the ability to do the most creative things with some of the most wonderful things. Oh, this is so good. This is great. I got to tell you, it doesn't matter what anyone, oh my God, this is just great. The movies, the memories, the Night at the Museum. I totally forgot about Jumanji. I love Mrs. Doubtfire. Just love it. Insomnia was a creepy-ass Stephen King movie. Yeah, Birdcage was awesome. Birdcage, you got to admit, is one of the best. Birdcage, oh my God, that movie is so good. I love Aladdin. The one-hour photo, another super creepy movie. He's so creepy in that movie. Just so many, just, you know, the memories that come flooding every time you just hear something there. So great. Thank you. This is just really good because, like, you've spent an hour talking about each one of these movies.
Which is?
But Birdcage, I mean, you could just talk for hours. Every actor in that freaking movie is funny as all get out. Serious. Oh, wow. You did great. This is great.
Please, if you talk
about Dead Poets Society, Dead Poets Society sets him apart from the seriousness of what an actor could be. You look at Robin Williams in a different way from that movie on. You look at him and go, wait a minute, this isn't some goofy guy, just as, you know, whatever. This guy has got some meat on his bones. He's a serious actor. You fall in love with this character, this, you know, this professor that's leading these lives, these kids, and you don't even realize you're watching Robin Williams. It's not that comedian. It's this great actor, and fall in love with him, and then, you know, you watch Night at the Museum, you watch Jumanji, you watch Good, you know, and then you're watching Mrs. Out, but then you go back to Goodwill Hunting, and you're like, oh my God, you know, you've got another, and it just, this poem kind of weaves the whole tapestry of parts of this man that you really go, wow, you know, what talent, what amazement, what he brought to us. And different memories and different things and the generation of him, the development of him, the maturity of what we got to see and, you know, kind of like what we grew up with. So I really, really appreciate that. It's brilliant.
All his movies were good.
Yeah.
Real bad ones.
Yeah. Well, Popeye, you know, I don't know about that one. But, yeah. Oh, wow. Deborah Lee, your thoughts?
I had to mute myself. I was literally sitting here laughing out loud. Wayne, that was totally priceless. You passed in. You name dropped so many movies that you had all these different visuals going through my head, and I mean you had everything, even Nanu Nanu. It was hysterical. It was brilliant. It shows your mega talent, and like the giggles came in good timing. So like, thanks for those. It's really really a fun one. I had to save it.
And Rock and Tour.
That's an excellent piece, Wayne. I loved the mention of the movies and the smattering of you know, things like Nanu Nanu and whatnot. It's just great memories. And like Sweet Pea said, but you know, it wasn't just the memories of the movies, because you know, you had your own little storyline going on as well, so it carried itself. It felt a little like a routine because of the music you had playing in the background, you know. Yeah. I had the old soft shoe from vaudeville days or something like that. It's like, you know, it just felt like, you know, a nice scene. You painted a lovely picture.
Well, thank you there, my record there. Thank you very much. Good comment.
Death to Smoochie.
Death to Smoochie. That's just beautiful. That's just great.
She was so versatile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't think there was anything he couldn't do.
He couldn't fly. But he did have love, Christopher Reeves. Absolutely did. Oh, just gorgeous stuff.
Was this all the movies he was in?
No.
Is that all the movies?
Not all of them. No, no, no.
It's the top 24. Okay. The top 24 movies it is.
24, wow.
It's the top one.
Off the top of my head, you know, you didn't mention The World According to Garp.
Yeah, that's my favorite. It's one of my favorites, too. I didn't mention it, though. It wasn't, just didn't intend to put it in there. I could have put it probably somewhere.
Holy crap.
I looked at it about 25 minutes, though. I looked at the whole thing about 25 minutes. I looked at the list of the movies and wrote it out in 25 minutes. I recorded it about 5 minutes after that, and it was done. I was rushing trying to get the show, and I got the show 24 hours early. It was amazing.
Awesome.
Wow. So what is, okay, if you had to name one movie, Wayne, what would it be?
Your favorite? Seriously, when it's serious, you know, you get Good Will Hunting, but then it's a comedy. It's got to be the most funny stuff. I don't know. Giamatti was great. Giamatti was really funny, and so was good. Night at the Museum was really great. They're all great. I don't know which one to pick is this. I think one of them is best, and then I look at another and I go, no, it's better than that. And, they're all good.
Which was the one where he worked in
Awakenings.
Oh, yeah, Awakenings. Yeah, I like it. The Great Awakening. I think it was in some.
I love Dead Poets Society. That's probably one of my top movies, and I love Mrs. Doubtfire. I love it, Mrs. Doubtfire. And of course, Birdcage. I love that movie.
Fabulous.
Love that movie.
He's a great Popeye.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Which was the one where he played, he was in the photo store stealing the pictures?
One of our photo?
One hour photo.
Yeah.
Something like that. That was a weird movie.
Yeah, because it felt like he didn't. I mean, he played the part beautifully, but it's like you couldn't picture him for that part until you see him do it. It was crazy.
Yeah, I know. He was quite the man. I really, really enjoyed him.
And he was able to do all that was going on in his personal life.
He had the life. So what, Deb, what's your favorite?
Oh, I can't even. Wow. Like I said, I really loved what Dreams May Come. I thought he did a great job at playing in the Night of the Museum movie where he was Teddy Roosevelt. Patch Adams.
Patch Adams one.
Good in Jumanji. I'm sorry, I suck at picking.
Me too. Well, that's what I mean. When you're somebody's that good, you just don't know.
Right?
No.
And Heather.
You don't.
Sorry. If you go see the chat wall, there's this movie.
I just had it on the. Oh, a robot.
The robot.
AI.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, the AI guy where he's the robot man. I forgot all about that one.
That, you know, that's the thing. He's made so many movies that we couldn't even sit here and try to comprehend. And then you look at that list on the board there, and I could keep adding. There's another whole list almost as long of his TV appearances. And then on top of that, there's theater. He's in a video game, and you know, and then of course there's video recordings. But like I said, I have a list here in front of me half as long for TV shows he was in. You know, obviously.
His TV appearance
surprised
me. I didn't know he was on like Law and Order.
Right? Yeah.
I did not know. I didn't know that he was on Law and Order. That freaked me out.
And Rowan and Martin's Laughing, that I guess he was like really young there. Saturday Night Live, duh.
I think when they remade Laughing, they asked him to do it. I don't know that he did the original Laughing.
I think
he was there. He's a little young. Young kid jumping out there all the time. I think he was there in the original. I'm pretty sure
he was. 1977, so I don't know when it started. But I mean, Sesame Street. Friends. I mean, come on. The man, how many people can say that? SpongeBob SquarePants. Come on.
Of course he was in SpongeBob. Why wouldn't you say?
Everybody wanted him to show him to get on the show because he was so funny. Everybody wanted him at the time.
Yeah,
and I mean he did brilliant from Popeye to Aladdin to, you know, some of the more out there ones like The Birdcage. I mean,
I love The Birdcage. Yeah,
brilliant.
I liked Love According to Garp. That was a good one.
Yeah, that was good.
Happy Feet.
The reason I didn't use that is it's hard to rhyme with that word, Garth. And I started down and said, I can't rhyme none of that, so I left it out.
Yeah, Heavenly Angels, so that was awesome. All right. I am
the
up on the board.
You remember the Undertoad?
The Undertoad.
Yeah, he was talking about it. That was from Garp. I don't know if he wrote that bit of it or not, but it was very memorable.
All right. This
Sorry.
Is my poem. No, that's okay. I like Undertoads. Don't stress, there could be clowns. By Sweet Pea. Violence, ears, and chewing gum bubbles perched on smiled lips. temper tantrums displayed inside the vacuum space, as a sugarcane face sucked lemons inside raw cheeks. Consequences of circus acts lay littered on the lawn, bottles with ignorance leaves bloodstains in the driveway, bodies of the disobedient lay dismembered on the porch. Festivals of fighting bring explosions of grandeur, headaches and pounding join the band, and the rock star takes a bow. Silence and calm is weaving in tattered rags, on knees bent seeking its own solitary confinement, as the asphalt is grinding tires into rubber bands. Mirrors on walls, deceiving, look back into eyes. Dancing marionettes held on strings by stressful things. Drop the sunburn and keep the moon on call. And then.
Nice scene.
I wasn't sure whether to say something. I was waiting to see if I didn't want to step on raconteur's toes. But for one thing, I really liked it, the title, Don't Stress, There Could Be Clowns. And just the title, for some reason, it made me think of the fact, like, the tears of a clown, you know, there's a sadness there. And yeah, unless you're afraid of clowns, the clown would take that stress away. And then some of the stuff, violet spears of chewing gum bubbles perched on smiled lips, temper tantrum displayed inside the vacuumed space as a sugarcane face sucked lemons and clued raw cheeks. But like just the visuals of the face that just sucked lemons and stuff had me giggle. Festivals of fighting. Explosions of grandeur, headaches and pounding join the band and the rock star takes a bow. There's something there of those headaches that, you know, he's taking the bow, but he's hiding the headaches. There's a duality to your stanzas, like the shock that we all had when we lost him because, you know, everybody sees him and he always seemed really happy and again, it reminds me of the tears of a clown because they're only out when there's no one around. And I got that kind of feel. And the mirrors on walls deceiving. Look back into eye. Hatter often talks about looking at yourself in the mirror and how long. I would imagine that in the amount of sadness that he was in and hiding, that he couldn't look at himself in the eyes in the mirror for too very long. So there was a lot of mixed back and forth in this, but it's really brilliant, and the pieces tell a story. Great share, my sweet. Brack, what do you think?
Yeah, you excel at like offering up something sweet and then taking it away. You know, like Deb mentioned, the duality of it. You know, you mention something and before you could say ah, you snatch it away and make it into something horrible. You know, there might be clowns unless you're afraid of clowns. You know, the whole idea of that is like, you know, oh man, you know. You went there, but you almost have to do that to some people because they don't realize, you know, everyone wants to offer up this pretty fluffy feature, and then you're like, you know, there's people that are allergic or there's people that don't like, or and you know, it broadens the perspective a lot because, you know, there's a lot of things that people don't realize, and the mention of there might be clowns also, like Deb mentioned, the idea of sending the clowns, that sentiment of, you know, the sadness that some people try and hide. You know, at least that's what I get from that bit too. People try and smile and pretend everything's all right, but meanwhile they're dying inside. So, you know, I saw that in this piece as well. I thought it was lovely.
Thank you.
Comet and Hatter.
Yeah, it's got a lot of feeling to it. You did good describing the stress towards the end. I mean, you don't stress, there could be clowns. It starts out describing that you did well on bringing the stress level up. Silence and Calm is leaving in tattered and rags. I mean, was that the intent?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's the chaos. Chaos, chaos, chaos. And, you know, just finally you're just looking at yourself like, I can't take this anymore.
Yeah. So what the, guess how much he was worth when he died without looking?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
100 million.
He went from his parents not willing to pay his tuition.
Well, that seems probably a family fighting over the money.
And it also goes to show you that money can't make you happy.
He's got three ex-wives, so.
Oh, my God. One of my favorite quotes of his, divorce from the Latin meaning rip one's balls out through their wallet.
Great comments, guys. And Mr. Wayne Gent.
Yeah, my cat was raised in hell, so I picked the phone and came down the stairs and listened to you read this. And you had so much emotion in your voice. You had the emotion that he probably felt. He felt his pain through your voice. It was great emotion in your read. I loved it. And it's a good poem. And it's sad about his personal life. Just I try not to think about it too much because he made me laugh so much. I tried to forget about the way he died. Because he's just so comical. But it was a great poem. Great poem with all the emotion in it. I love the way you read it. Appreciate it. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you
comments,
very much.
Everyone. Back to you, my sweet.
So, clowns on top of everything. He was always ready, you know, known as the class clown, doing all of that. So we definitely had our little class clown. Deb, can I get you to read King's poem for me?
I would love to.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And then I will.
And here it is on the board. That was like perfect timing there.
Yeah.
Okay. This is called Trespassers Will Be Fined, written by Kay. And here we go. August is sweltering in its accusations of mind. My feet dangle the earth, never to graze, always reaching for land and failing as the tablecloths face the farmhouse. Little boy blue and murdered innocence, Mother Hubbard was a fraud. Living in a shoe, her house of horrors. She was the devil in disguise. I know the truth. Anniversaries of relations are the aggressive rage that placemats, inescapable as colors blow, sew in the threads in needle-eyed slates painted to lie. I feel raped easier than you know. Crying myself to sleep with an ache that is intolerable. Executioner damning my soul to feel the pain that is not my own, yet bared witness to. I've come to understand the silent truth that I know. Repentance is not free. My sentence is my fate. You see, I feel it is my destiny to outlive you all. So as I can feel every scrap of pain and let it rot in my bones till I become ash of the earth. Let me go back. I don't want it. Who murdered your soul? So as you can go to murder mine, blood we share is not mine. As you're the one who could bring bad men to their knees and make them weep. Please release me. As every year, I don't know how much longer I can carry this. My crime is to roam, feeling the scraps that pour acid on the visions that don't want to release me. End poem. Damn.
Damn is right. One heavy poem. Wow. You know, my comment before is if pain could teach a class, this would be its lesson plan. This is incredible to the quote. Good people end up in hell because they can't forgive themselves. This is such a powerful poem. Such a personal, you can just feel the pain ooze from every word, every stanza. So I can feel every scrap of pain and let it rot in my bones until I become ash of the earth. Let me go back. Don't make me carry it. Don't let me. I mean, you're the one that could bring bad men to their ease and make them weak. The blood we share is not mine. I love the absolute power and emotion that oozes from this. I just, you know, cannot express how powerful this poem is, Kay. I really, really love the commitment that you make in this poem to give back that pain to someone else and find your voice. And I hope that that continues in all your poetry and everything there is. Even if it's not your voice, or somebody that needs that voice, someone that can take this and use it for themselves. I know sometimes when poets write, we think that that's their issue, and that is not always the case. So if someone can find this for themselves, that would be beautiful. I really would love that. Excellent piece. Wayne, what did you think? Yeah, you did. Okay. So, back into your thoughts.
Yeah, there's a darkness in this that, you know, I enjoy the point of view, the way that she mentioned, you know, old Mother Hubbard and the hell. I mean, the falsehood that kind of hide behind, you know, the, they present one thing and you know, it's looked upon in one way. And yeah, I enjoyed the whole piece, the way that she did that. It read really well. I enjoyed it very much, Kay.
And then Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah, she does well describing the pain that he carried with him, or that one would carry with him, and not being able to forgive yourself. Great, she did very good at the complex brain of Robin Williams and what he was carrying with him. Tears of a clown, you know, you'd never see him.
Mm. And then Deb, your thoughts.
You know, this one, because it was so emotionally powerful, it was really hard to read because I kept getting pulled into to the feelings mm-hmm. that were in it. And some of the metaphors, like the little boy blue and murdered innocence, Mother Hubbard's a fraud. I mean, this is complex in word, but stone cold, in your face, gut wrenching, powerful emotion, and like the sadness in some of the parts, and the resolve that it's just this is what I was handled, this is what I was handed, and I'm trying to get through it the best I can. But will you ever let me go? And it was like I said, I had to keep trying to stop myself from getting pulled in too far, or by the end I would have been crying. It was, I was going to add it to a list and realize that I already had it on a couple. I was really honored to read it. It was it was one of her best, I think. Oh, and the kicker, okay, the kicker. I recognized that word bank at the bottom, okay. This word bank turned into a gut-wrenching powerhouse. That's impressive.
All right. You are on the board, Miss Deb. From my last week's show.
Ah, yes. And you know, I'm upset. I spent hours thumbing through my stuff. I have a poem about that I wrote in reference to Patch Adams. I believe a Popeye. I believe dreams may come. And then one just that I used one of those pieces of art that I put on the wall today. I couldn't find any of them. I was just going to scrap this one, and I ran out of time trying to find it. So instead, let's talk about Saturday Night Live and oh no, Mr. Bill. Because, I took a fistful of different things that happened to him and turned it into a one day from hell. And it's called, Oh No, Mr. Bill Stained Blueberry Hill Road. Here we go. Mr. Hands Handmade the Man of Clay that the TV world calls Mr. Bill, then sculpted his little dog called Spot, but this guy, Mr. Sluggo, ate his fill, chomping down Spot for breakfast. It, with heartburn, Sluggo ate a pill. As Sluggo stood on the television stage, hand brushed his hair off Bill's scalp for the toupee molded in brown clay to cover his bald patch. Then he hovers Bill over the bed made of poison spikes, dropping zombie Bill on the display. Oh, no! Box Bill, sawed in half, then catapulted him over outer space, up, up, and away. Bill's leg is amputated and his gut cattle prodded before meeting Kenny from South Park. His lips to eyeballs are toothbrushed off, and then he spies Gumby in an alley in the dark, with Pokey Blockhead and the crew peeking as the dog growls with a loud bark. On the beach, Bill meets Bay Bikini Dressed, buys her a mobile home. But now it's Boulder Pressed. The Claymation Man beats all odds after he's demolished by a stick of dynamite, electrocuted into X-ray skeleton, smashed by a burlap bag filled with Coke powdered white. Finding his arms squashed with the telephone receiver, the Repo Man towed his red roadster car at midnight. They sell his house and drove a spike through his foot. An earthquake split the ground, swallowing him in one bite. So he hitchhiked with Gumby out of Blueberry Hill Town. With his knotted handkerchief, Bindle tie-dyed blue, to find the polypropylene ninja swords training equipment for him and his little yellow dog Spot number two. Now Mr. Bill is beheaded on cinder blocks, then fighters harpooned Clayman on a kendo stick, too. In his karate gi that matches Spot's, tied on with a red belt for battle, and men broke a board, smooshing the dog. Naked foot warriors drop-kicked him to land, stomped him into the cement floor. The karate school is not as he planned. Skydiving without the parachute finally kills off old Mr. Bill, crash-mashing onto the platform, concussed from the tumbled spill. Then, striped kitty teeth on his torso, leaving him just a stained, now roadkill. Blue Sluggo picked his banjo strings for money to pay for Mr. Bill's cremation bill. And
oh, my God.
Oh, first and foremost,
I have to say, I am so, so happy I did not read this poem, because there's no way in hell I couldn't have done this. No way. Absolutely not. This was brilliant. This was funny. I'm so glad you read it. I could not have pulled it off because, oh my God, you were brilliant. I loved this every time they killed him, and I loved your question at the end, how many times they killed Mr. Bill over Kenny. I think Mr. Bill is hands down the winner, especially as far as creativity. I'm not sure I like the way he died more. I like the stick of dynamite. I like the mobile home. God. This is just so great. Oh, my God.
And you want one last giggle? Apparently,
yeah.
Auto Rank really likes Mr. Bill, because if you hit my Auto Rank button, you will see that Mr. Bill scored my highest poll ever. Go figure.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. Well, that's hilarious. And I love Blue Sluggo picked his banjo strings for to pay for Mr. Bill's cremation bill. This is hilarious. This is, I can see why. Oh, this is great. Hatter, your thoughts?
Yeah, Life and Times of Mr. Bill. I remember it being on. It was one that you always waited to see.
A little to find out how they were going to kill him this time.
Oh, no. I think it sparked Fire Marshal Bill. the Wayans brothers show.
Living Color.
Thank you. Yeah, Fire Marshal Bill.
And
thank you, Hatter.
Bracken Tour, your thoughts.
It's funny that you want to cremate a clay guy, because, you know, I think you'd end up with a mug or a plate. But I mean, the thing was hysterical from beginning to end. It's really brought memories of the show. And, you know, all the Mr. Hand, Mr. Sluggo, and then Spot, too. I don't know if they did that on the show, but they should have. That was hysterical. I mean, the whole thing, you had the sense of humor, the irony, the foreboding of, you know, it's going to happen, dropping boulders and everything. I mean, you really captured it well. Well done, beautifully written.
Thank you, Raconteur. And just because I wanted to get a couple that would match the art, it turns out that on the very first episode, when Mr. Sluggo ate Spot, he ate a brown dog. And then from that point on, Spot was yellow. So I called him Spot, too. Just a trivia bit.
You spotted the difference.
I did spot the difference.
That's great. Deb, did you put Rack in the studio?
There was
no audio.
I didn't look. Is there one now?
I didn't know. I didn't look.
Okay, I'm looking again.
I'm just going to read that for you.
No, there is not a sound recording for that poem. It's from the Hurt Locker.
Okay. I just didn't look. Okay, not a problem. All right. I'm going to really use you again, Deb.
Okay.
You're gonna be my reader. I'm gonna put Heavenly Angel up. Have you read
her? So I'm reading for Mr. Raconteur. Is that the deal? Or
no, you're gonna read for Heavenly Angel right now.
All right, I can do that. I'm just trying to find the board, running my mouth while there it is. Okay, and I see Heavenly Angel, and her poem is called Remember Me by Heavenly Angel. And here we go. Think of me when we had a laugh that felt like the world would never, I'm sorry, think of me when we had a laugh that felt like it would never end. Think of me without pain. Please promise me this. Just close your eyes and know I'm right by your side. My light shines through to show you the way. I'll make you stronger. Remember quiet moments, caring, working, and hoping, and smile into the night. I'll be there amongst the stars. and love.
This is lovely. A loving tribute to anyone we've lost. And, wow. I think it's a thought that everyone should have when they're missing someone that's gone, that they're right next to them, remembering, you know, those quiet moments and smile, because I don't believe people go far from you. My son has this great theory that humans are energy and you cannot destroy energy. So when people that we love leave us, we absorb part of their energy. They're always with us because energy is not, can't destroy it. So those we love, somehow we absorb their energy and we absorb the love they always gave us. So they're always a part of us. And that your poem kind of reminded me of his theory of love and life and death and all of those things. Beautiful. Kind of something that goes past just loving and missing people. I really, really thought it was beautiful. Back into your thoughts.
Yeah, this is beautiful. I want to say, you know, and never having met the man, I would think that it sounds like a sentiment that he would thoroughly endorse, something that might have come from him, Robin Williams himself. It was beautifully done in his memory, to his memory.
And how are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is another hallmark. Just you could, you know, think of anybody, like you said, that we lost to this. It's just beautiful.
And Deb, you read it, your thoughts?
I agree with something that you had mentioned already. It reads like a message that anybody who had passed would want the people they left behind who loved them to know that they are still with them, that they're there at their side, that they're there in love that's left behind, that it's a brevity that speaks to the world. I thought it was really awesome, and it's always an honor to be a reader.
Stunning angel, as always. All right, we've got Mr. Titus up. Mr. Titus, oh, God. I still get chills when I think of what he wrote. I just cannot help it. Thank you, Titus, like a little schoolgirl. All right, here we go.
The portrait of Dorian Gray. Withhold the twist of fate when mercy pledges the portraiture facing my demons, as from within the paint that accepts the canvas first needs acceptance by that rogue to interpret it. Thus that the intended stroke reflects that for every moment that I have waited, an abundancy of fear from the aftermath, changing any outlook broadened. It separates the evil from the good, joining the soul's abysmal change of mood. It appears wet for discomfort's sake, and dries nonetheless for fade, remaining as grey as petulance, and black as the gloom it holds. Monochrome is the significant upholster to languish behind, though behind me there is nothing more to establish fear than the joy of replenished youth. 'Tis an almanac, crying at the creation of its maker, staying young in life as it is in death. I would give my soul for that,
I really love the quote that Titus put at the very front of this poem, and it says, Robin Williams had hidden much of what was wrong. So sad was it, and I do hope the portrait of Dorian Gray as a worthy sympathetic feeling, and I believe it absolutely does. As Dorian Gray, the poem, as he says, facing my demons is from within. The paint that accepts the canvas first needs acceptance by that rogue to interpret it. I'm very intrigued by the rogue that to interpret it. It has so many possibilities and avenues to go how a rogue might interpret. Also, it separates the evil from good, joining the souls. Robin Williams, with his disease and everything that went on in his head, his mind literally going mad. He never knew what was good, what was evil, what was, you know, the hallucinations, the dementia, all of the things that, you know, his brain was going on that we didn't even know. And he didn't even know the disease, he didn't know till after his death. You know, we thought it was depression and all of these things, and it wasn't. It was this horrible, I'm sorry, Rack, what was the name of the disease again? It's just flipped my brain.
Lewy body dementia.
Yeah. Lewy body dementia. One of the most horrific diseases anyone could ever have. And this kind of makes me feel that. Remaining gray as petulance and black as the gloom it holds. I mean, that's exactly where he was. Staying young in life as it is in death. Crying at the creature of its maker. I would give my soul for that. And I think that in the end, he did give his soul for that. He was losing everything in his mind, as he would tell his wife, I want to reset my brain. So in the end, he did give his soul. He gave his soul because he didn't know where he was or who he was or what was becoming of him. And he ended up giving his soul. And, you know, a lot of people want to judge and do all that, but we don't know what his mind was going through. He was literally turning into a madman. And I really think this was on point and on, you know, everything that this brilliant man was losing towards the end and not knowing who he was, not understanding who he was. And we don't know how far advanced he was in this disease and what he was seeing or hearing or losing. And I love the end of this poem, give my soul for that. And I think that there's a possibility that he did. So brilliant, brilliant bring to tonight's show tonight, Titus. I greatly appreciate that. And Rack, your thoughts.
Yeah, I think every performance he gave a bit of his soul, because that was his way of trying to stay young forever, was to make everybody else laugh. So I thought this was brilliant, Titus. Very enjoyable.
And Hatter.
Yeah, there's a certain madness to begin with in his comedy. There were scenes I remember people pointing out to watch him, especially in Mork and Mindy, how he had to hold it back. He had to suppress it down, his rapid-fire comedy.
Yeah.
His brain was wired to do that. Impressive.
And Deb, your thoughts?
I thought that between his wording and his voice as he read, And then that there was a hauntingness to the music that he chose to go with it. So, like, combine them, and it was like a chilling read, and you could feel the emotion. I liked pieces like the facing the demons and gray as petulance, and crying at the creation of its maker. It's those kind of wording that bring it to life and force us to feel it as he's reading. And like I said, it's just such a pleasure to hear the way he pronounces words and his accent and his reading. It's like, you know, a real treat. And it's quite interesting how you can take the portrait of Dorian Gray, but you can also spin it into thoughts for what Robin Williams might be thinking, but it could also pull you into introspections of yourself and then thoughts of how some of the pieces touch the writer. It's pretty complex. I'm always impressed, but I'm very impressed.
Absolutely. All right. Raconteur.
President.
President.
Captain, my captain.
Oh, Captain, my captain. I am going to read Raconteur. Only because I like to have him make me cry. Yeah. So we're going to go through that and do that. So let me get you on the table. Abject, object, abject. Abject. I can't say that word either. Solitude.
Abject solitude. You were saying it right.
I know. I always say it like I don't give my BJs very well, and that didn't sound right at all.
Oh. Oh my God.
Oh my. I cannot believe I just said that on the radio. Oh my God. Anyway, I have a southern slang to them, but I'll just think I'll crawl into a hole and leave now. Oh my God. So much for my PG-13. Okay.
I missed it. Say it again.
No, I'm not saying that again, no matter what.
Yeah, what you say. Oh, we
anyway.
Have to wait till. All right.
Sweets in her PJs.
Yeah, sweets like red as all red can get. I'm telling you what. Wow. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, there you go. Must have been filtering me tonight, let me tell you. I'm going to try to get myself together here. Let me introduce you to my tortured soul. Infused in all that I write, which begs the question, so what is your goal? My reply is bleeding on the page for my reader's delight. I've learned my sense of irony, listening to the universe laughing at the satire. That is my existence. And just when I'm convinced things can't get any worse, fate demonstrates the futility of my resistance. What I need doesn't matter. I've learned to make do with what I got, leaving my dreams on the ground shattered because my feelings matter not. Bits and pieces of nothing, seeds of hope that never bore fruit. Apparently I'm missing the one thing that might assist in my romantic pursuits. I fail to understand why I'm viewed as a fool or a fraud. Things don't seem to go as planned, and people's perception is flawed. I've given everything I'm away. I've given everything I am away, and anything left, time has ground to dust. Nobody bothers to listen to what I have to say.
My tears have reduced my armor to rust and bone. Deb, go ahead and give the first comment, please.
Did you say me?
Yeah.
Raconteur. I sometimes don't even know what to say. Like, what I need doesn't matter. I've learned to make do with what I've got, leaving my dreams on the ground shattered because my feelings matter not. And, like, for one, I disagree. I think your feelings matter tons. Bits and pieces of nothing, seeds of hope that never bore fruit. Apparently, I'm missing the one thing that might assist in my romantic pursuits. I fail to understand why I'm viewed as a fool or a fraud. I don't view you as either of those. I've given everything I am away, and anything left, time has ground to dust. It's heartbreaking because in the strength in word, it showed that you believe, how do I put that? You believe that. You take it as a fact that you've failed to understand, or that you failed to do what you should, or that your bits and pieces are not worth the time, and I wholeheartedly disagree, and I say shame on the person or persons that made you feel that way. I think that you need to avoid them and hang out with us more because, like, we appreciate you for the amazing person that you are. And apparently, whomever drove you to this poem doesn't. And I have a message for them that I can't say on a PG-13 show, but your poem is freaking awesome.
Thanks, Doug. Kind of thinking a little of Jim's life when I was writing it, though.
Okay. I'm sorry, my son just got a bunch of little penises in the mail. But anyway. Hatter.
Not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Was this still a Robin Williams reference, or just the open...
Well, I was thinking of like his struggles. As much as he put himself out there and tried to present a brave face, he was fighting with everything else, you know, behind the scenes, and he gave no hint of it, you know. He did reach out for help, but, you know, at the same time, he gave his all in what he did. And, you know, his charitable efforts and everything else.
Okay,
kind of,
fill me in on his... On this final diagnosis is what, again?
Lewy body dementia.
And what is that per se?
It's kind of slowly, any kind of dementia, it's kind of slowly losing your mind. And,
right.
You know, I think, you know, what everyone was mentioning earlier, the big tragedy of it is, you know, his mind worked, you know, like a million miles an hour. It was frenetic. And to watch that dissipate and disappear, you know, it's not like, you know, losing a nickel. It's like losing, you know, everything. And to be so probably so keenly aware of it, you know, to drive him to suicide, it's like, wow. I can't imagine, you know, what he went through that would make someone make that decision and say, you know, I'm, you know, better off taking my own life. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's really hard to to think about. But you know, to do what he did and still, you know, put up that brave face, I think. Anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. All right, Hatter. You are my last poem of the night.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's Checkers to Chess. Robin Williams.
Hold on, I gotta put it on the board. Hold on.
I did.
Hold on. Oh,
yeah,
thank you. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. A voice of chaos fought to be a rage displayed in comedy, holding back the chaos in a 3D brain, Checkers to Chess, just a little insane. When the sadness arrived, it was in disguise. There was no one to clean up the end. The painted smiles worked for a while. A clown no longer pretends. Faking this day, I'm saddened to say, let us cry just for a while. Rest in peace, my son. Your job is done. The memories will forever smile.
Wow. I love this. You did such a great job describing him and that sense of emotion of, you know, how sad it is to see him go and holding back that chaos in his 3D brain. I love that Checkers to Chess and just a little insane. I love that line. 3D brain.
Yeah, everybody else, when we were playing Checkers
to Chess.
Yeah.
I just love that whole line. That's really cool. Wow. That's a great write.
Thank you.
So many lines in here, I like it. Taking this day, I'm sad to say, but it's crisis for a while. Wow, this is really good, Hatter, but what else do you? You're an amazing guy. Beautifully written. And Rocky, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, everything he wrote was great, but that closing line was the mic drop, man. That was brilliant. I mean, the whole thing was great, but when you hit that last line, it was like, damn, that was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't have picked a better closing line. That was just brilliant.
Thank you, Rock.
And Deb.
Daughters, I agree with Rack about the closing line, that the memories will forever smile. Actually, the whole couplet there, rest in peace, my son, your job is done. The memories will forever smile. And we do, as sad as it is, when we think of him, for the most part, something triggers in us that brings a smile, whether it be a clip from a movie or one of his stand-up routines, so that the closing there was really powerful. But what stands out is with your traditional Hatter rhyme style and just six little couplets, you packed a pocket full of emotion into this one, Hatter. So I think you did quite brilliantly.
Thank you, Deb.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. All right, you guys. What a wonderful show. I can't tell you how great it was. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for, what are you giggling about? Oh, get my text.
I did.
I don't know why.
You're a sick woman.
But yeah.
Is there something you'd like to share with the class?
Not really. But yeah. My son just brought those over to me. But anyway.
What an interesting
story. Something between the girls, can I say. It's a little Robin Williams joke there.
Taste the rainbow.
And someone... He got him in the mail from one of his friends. I'm like, your friends are on. So anyway, right. Thank you everybody for
What's
coming.
Share.
Well, I can share. Leave those alone. Don't touch those. Don't lick those. Leave those alone, honey.
I licked them, now they're mine.
Don't you eat that yellow snow. Look out where them huskies go.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go. Fun show that way. Love and respect everyone.
Oh, you want to forward? You can forward that to Hatter. Explain them
okay.
to Hatter, okay, Deb?
Okay.
All right.
Good night, please.
All right, everybody. Love and respect everybody. Thank you. Once again, this
night.
Is Chemo Voices, sponsored by the AP Poetry Foundation. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for using O Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Good night.
Bye.